Most of us take our mobility for granted. I know I do. My next guest probably did too, until a life-changing event on Fraser Island in 1982, when he was just 21. David Constantine now leads an organisation called Motivation, which helps people in developing countries get wheelchairs and other equipment. And here's the thing, there are 20 million people in the world who need wheelchairs but can't get them. David Constantine's in Australia this week, and he joins me now. Welcome, David. What was the event that changed your life back in 1982?
Well, I suppose it was that diving injury I had that made me sort of take a completely different path from the path I would have taken in life. And it's led me down a path which eventually got me into what I'm doing now.
You dived into a pool of water that was shallower than you thought.
And it was a sort of washout left by the tide because of, you know, we couldn't go in the sea on Fraser because of sharks. And so it was just a hot day in February, and we were sort of stopped with the Jeep. I dived in once too many times.
Yeah. What was the extent of your injuries?
I'm what they call a C4-5 quadriplegic, so I broke my neck between cervical bones 4 and 5, which has left me paralysed from the sort of chest down. So I've got my shoulders and biceps, but no grip in my hands, no sensation below my sort of shoulder level. But I can sort of push my chair indoors, not outside. Got no grip, so that, you know, affects what I can do in terms of my independence. So I can't get myself in and out of my chair. Can't dress myself, can't drive.
Now, when this happened, you were studying agriculture.
That's right.
But after the accident, you changed course. And what got you interested in wheelchair design?
It took a while because I didn't really ever think about what happened to people in developing countries and their wheelchairs. I, you know, was in a wheelchair myself at that point. And I just started studying something that I felt would help me get a job. I went to university and studied computing and accountancy, which was sort of the furthest thing from my mind ever in my life choice before. And then I went to work for a computer company, IBM, for 2 years. That wasn't really me. Great company, but not really my thing. Then I decided I discovered what industrial design was. And, you know, industrial design, product design is the design of all the things around us, like the keyboard, the phone, the TV, the chair you're sitting on, and so on. And I suddenly thought, well, all those buttons I have really trouble with and those telephone handsets that I can't pick up, that's industrial design. And if I was involved in that, I'd know what I could use and what I couldn't and what people could use. And you could sort of get into universal design, which is designed for everybody that everybody can use. So that's what sort of switched me onto it. So I went and applied for a master's at the Royal College of Art to do computer-related industrial design. It was on that course that we got handed a project, a 3-week project in our first year to design a wheelchair for developing countries. And that's the first thing I came across. So that was 8 years after my injury. Before that, I'd never crossed my mind.
Thought about it?
No.
What was so special about your winning design?
Well, I teamed up with another guy. He'd travelled a fair bit in Asia and Africa, and he had a good sense of what could be made in a small local workshop. So the brief was very open. It was design a wheelchair, and there were no, you know, stipulations about what it should be made from or the cost or anything. They hadn't set anything, which makes it more difficult in some ways because you're trying to make it, we think, well, it's got to be low cost, but then we've got to sort of balance that up with half-decent quality. And then you're also competing against the other guys on the course and thinking, well, theirs is going to come out at $20 and we need to make ours a bit less than that. So it was a really interesting exercise because you had to set your own variable, you know, your own parameters really in your brief. And so we set ours being that it was, you could use different size rear wheels because we knew that there were different size of rear wheels available in other countries, not just the 24-inch normal wheel that you get, you know, in Europe and the US and so on and here. And so we made it out of steel tube because we knew that was fixable in most places with a basic welder, basic skills, whereas aluminium isn't, the cheapest possible. And then the other thing we tried to do, but by being a wheelchair user myself, I was more concerned about not so much the design of it, but what the person was going to do in it day to day. So how is this person going to transfer into it? How they were going to then maybe convert it to washing, assuming that a person could only afford one wheelchair. how they might they go to, say, a market in it or lead their daily life, not just it be a wheelchair to be pushed around in as a sort of passive recipient.
So not just a product, you were thinking about the user.
Yes, and that's, I think, what won it for us, really.
Yeah. You headed off to India and Bangladesh.
Yeah.
And what did you find?
We went over to India to sort of if I'm really honest, to have a bit of a holiday from college.
You wouldn't be the first to do that.
No, and on the premise that we would go and research, you know, the appropriateness of what we'd done in this design, because we were encouraged by our tutors not to let it drop because they thought it was a really good thing. And one of the guys in our course had worked in Bangladesh at a particular centre called the Centre for the Rehabilitation of the Paralysed. And he said, well, if you guys are going to India, you must go to Bangladesh and visit this lady called Valerie Taylor, who started this centre in the 70s. And so we contacted her and went. And we got there and she was running this little spinal injury centre. So it's like a mirror image of what I'd been rehabbed in, but in a very basic way, and some of the issues that she was facing were pretty horrific, really, with bad pressure sores and illnesses and so on. And the big problem they had was wheelchairs. So they had their own little workshop, tiny little workshop, making very basic copies of old orthopaedic-style chairs, that, you know, made in China, chrome sort of chairs. They'd make one a month, and they were very heavy and very expensive. And so she said, well, would you build us one of your designs? So we did in a few days. We stayed there about a week. And she thought it was so fantastic that she said, this is fantastic. Would you come back here and do this for 3 months when you finish your course? So we said, why not? That was sort of the beginning of it, really. Had she not said that, we probably would have never gone back to the centre.
You'd been invited back, and you go back for 6 months
yeah,
and get a wheelchair workshop going, in effect. How did you do that?
And we looked at the workshop and said, well, you know, making one a month isn't very efficient for a start, so we need to look at the sort of batch processing. And there were two guys, local guys, working there. And then looked at the design that we'd left there in the year before, the original design, and they'd been using it around the centre. And so we went around and asked everybody people had tried it and said, what do you like about it? What do you dislike about it?
Mm.
Thankfully, it was still in one piece, which was one good thing. And so we worked out a completely different design, basically, from what we'd started with. And being designers, we were quite happy to do that, to sort of start a fresh sheet, but take the good bits out of what we'd dreamt up at college, but designed it on site. I mean, it was literally sometimes sketching out on a concrete floor on the floor of the workshop, because we didn't have any paper. And then put a prototype together and very much involving the two local guys who were going to eventually run this project, because we knew we couldn't be there for a long term. We only had a certain amount of money to spend on this thing. And then we knew we'd have to leave.
Yeah.
And Bangladesh is not necessarily a place you want to spend the rest of your life living. And so that sort of started our whole idea about sustainability of our work, is we're going to go there with the intention of handing this over to the local staff and the local partner. And because we were working within a well-structured local partner organisation and it had its own workshop with two already trained staff, what we had to do was get them on board to build this new design or work with us on the design and then develop it with us, so that they felt it was their project, not just our project, and we were telling them how to do it. And there were, that was a big learning curve to do that. It's a very important part of what we learned there.
What you've just been talking about, the buzzword for this stuff is called capacity building, which sounds so boring and tells you so little if you don't know what it means, but you've really perfectly explained it, I think, because that's exactly what you did. How did this kind of morph into motivation?
Well, halfway through that project, I went back via the States. I had to do a photographic job in the States, and then one of our sort of benefactors, this American lady had helped us, wanted me to go and do some extra fundraising. So I went back to the UK via the States. And when I got back to the UK, I got back to my flat in London, and on my answer message were two messages, one from an organisation asking us to go to Poland the next year, and another asking us to go to Cambodia because they'd heard about what we were doing. And so this is 1991.
Mm.
And so while I was at home, I went for some meetings with these two organisations. And that basically mapped out our next 2 years' work. So I went back to Bangladesh to the guys and said, hey, this is coming up. This looks like it's going to go further. By which time, Richard, who's the more of a strategic thinker amongst the three of us, had sort of mapped out in his little blue black book, as soon as I gave him this news, how we might structure this as an organisation and start building it. And that's essentially what happened. We went back from Bangladesh after 6 months. In the January of that next year, 92, we went and researched Cambodia and went to Vietnam, and spent 6 months in Poland in 92. And that was a very different project, because there we were dealing with a group of wheelchair users who were looking to, you know, they were in Eastern Europe as far as we're concerned, but they were very much looking to Western Europe for their sort of, you know, needs and inspiration. And they were saying, well, what we want are the sort of wheelchairs that you use, you know, yes. Aluminium, folded backrest down, quick-release wheels so we can drive our cars with them. We don't want what you've made in Bangladesh out of old sticks, you know, a water pipe and 28-inch wheels. We're not a developing country. This is not Asia. So there we were, and oh, when we won it for $150. So
completely different challenge.
Totally. And so... And a completely different environment. You had people living in villages and you know, going down the sides of paddy fields in Bangladesh. And here we were in Eastern Europe, which with architecture not unlike our own in the UK. So we, you know, we had to think again. And so being designers, we could sort of tear off the sheet and say, well, this is what we learned from Bangladesh. This is what we need to design for Poland. And so it started this thing where we were quite happy to redesign on every project. And then in 93, we went to Cambodia, and that's when we first realised that we needed to, well, we realised it in Poland, we needed to have a more clinical side to it as well. So it wasn't just the technical stuff. It wasn't just about the chair, that we had to sort of take on somebody who could sort of get that user input into the design of the chair. And that was basically when we started taking on physiotherapists and occupational therapists. So our first occupational therapist joined us in 93 to go to Cambodia and became that sort of link between the user and the design.
The scale of motivation, the reach of motivation now is really quite big, and you're launching here too. Where are you thinking in the Asia Pacific?
Well, what's happened is we've been asked to do work. We always work on invitation. And so over the last 17 years, we've worked in over 34 different countries. 3 years ago, we were invited to go and work in Papua New Guinea and East Timor. Those projects are now up and running. And we've just been invited to the Solomon Islands. And all this work is dependent on funding, essentially. Mm. So we have to apply for everything we spend on the projects. There's so much more interest from Australia in those regions allied to sort of Australian waters, that's why we're registering in Australia, to sort of continue that momentum, if you like.
What's the scale of the unmet need?
This figure of 20 million wheelchairs, the World Health Organization recently put out some guidelines on manual wheelchairs in less resource settings, and in that is where that 20 million wheelchairs that are needed. They reckon there's about...
That's the population of Australia, more or less.
Mm. It's a mind-blowing figure.
It is. Now, motivation's now working around the world, in, as you've explained, in different regions, and setting up a base here too. What's your ultimate goal?
We'd like to be able to work ourselves out of a job. I mean, ultimately, we shouldn't need to exist. If in a perfect world, we shouldn't need to exist. I mean, it's going to be a long time before that happens. We're 20 million wheelchairs. I mean, we've probably affected the production of maybe 50, 60,000 wheelchairs over 17 years, which doesn't sound that many, but then the projects, you know, do more than just give wheelchairs away. It's not about numbers so much. The problem with the 20 million is it makes you focus on the numbers and the hurry to fix it all. It's not about that. You know, I could have been sent home with the best wheelchair in the world from my rehab, but without all that sort of extra education and support in society, my quality of life would have been pretty poor, even with a fantastic wheelchair. And if I didn't know how to use it, or didn't know how to look after myself, or, you know, I wouldn't be here. So and my quality of life without the opportunities that my society allows me, my life would be awful. So the chair almost becomes the least of the person's worries. It should do. But obviously, if you haven't got one in the beginning, then you're not on the starting block.
But it's part of a suite of things that enable people.
Absolutely.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
Well, it's been inspiring to hear about your work. Thank you very much for joining us today, David.
Thank you.
David Constantine and David's organisation, Motivation, you can find out about on our website. That's how we normally do things. abc.net.au/rn/lifematters. We will link to it from there.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.